This episode of the podcast is brought to you by M&M Video Games,
a great local chain of retro video game store here in Pinellas County. My favorite location personally is the new Pinellas Park location.
Right, and there they have roughly 7,000 unique game titles in stock, a bunch of consoles, accessories, and even have a consignment section for all the really hard collectible finds.
They buy, sell, trade. If you have old games collecting dust that you don't know what to do with, they'll take them for cash or in-store credit.
And that's a little bit different than your usual box store gaming stores where they only give you store credit or an exchange of games. They are an easy one-stop shop for all gamers of all ages. You can check them out online at mandmvideogames.com for their online store and news. And now, on with the podcast.
Deep in the swamps, where my bones are raised, seats of 37 tables on a dead man's chest. Feeding on the souls of the dearly departed. Too bad they don't know that we're here to party.
Maddie, so we came here with me, Steve, and our friend Maddie, who's a literal troll that lives underneath a bridge. And
well, it's not a bridge. It's
an apartment in downtown Consequences, New Mexico. And
it's like a hobbit hole.
It really is. There's not really much lighting. None of the lights actually work. He has
it's a
plug in lights. He has a bunch of VHS tapes everywhere and a whole bunch of hardcover books.
He has a lot of VHSs.
He steals Wi-Fi from the nail salon.
I love it.
Next
it so
door.
Much.
It's like out of an HBO sitcom, and he's sleeping on an air mattress in between our two double beds, and he sounds like a saw cutting through wood with his snore.
That's a good snore.
It's a real good snore if you're not, you know, in the same room as him, but he's like face down. That's my theory of why he was snoring, is because he was face down and his nose and mouth were pressed so hard against the air mattress that he had trouble breathing. So he had to have gasps of air in order for him to do that.
Well, I think it's also he doesn't like cold, and we had the room down to like 67 degrees.
Yeah, with the fan on.
Yeah.
Instead of us just having it like on auto.
Like a normal.
No, we had three people in a 300 square foot room. And I run hot. Steve runs hot.
I run extremely hot.
And while I was up, while I was trying to fall back asleep, it was between Maddie's snoring and then Steve's inevitable sleep apnea that he's gonna have to get checked out.
What,
because,
for real?
Yeah, bro. you like, there were points in the night where you would like snore and then you would stop breathing and then you would gasp for air.
Oh my God, that's the dream.
And I was terrified. I was like, am I gonna have to fucking resuscitate Steve right now? But either way,
that's the dream. Go out in my sleep.
My name's Luke Bad News Burden.
I'm Psycho Steve Fury.
And this is Wrestleology, where we take a look at the past of professional wrestling to explain its present. Third time's a charm with that one.
Oh my God, you nailed it this time.
I fucking nailed it. I've been thinking about it.
Well, it's also because we don't have, like, the convention center hasn't opened yet.
No, we're just trying to utilize our time as best as we can before we get ultimately distracted and I make Steve interview people with a tiny microphone.
It's going to be super uncomfortable.
I'm
glad you guys are going to be here for that. That's
going
to be fun.
It's going to be uncomfortable. For me, it's going to be amazing. I'm going to love every second of it. But since we have no distractions, why don't we get on with our episode today? We have a stacked lineup for this episode today, and I think that in response to, not in response, but kind of like in the wake of the unbelievable cage match between the Lucha Brothers and the Young Bucks.
Incredible.
We decided that we were going to do a little bit of a deep dive and have just an open conversation on steel cage matches. Steve, you are currently watching a War Games match between Sting Squadron and the Dangerous Alliance. Now, to give everybody some ground rules for this episode, we are talking about specifically cage matches that are not the Elimination Chamber or
Hell in a Cell.
Hell in a Cell.
Even though I think War Games is technically a Hell in a Cell match, yeah, but, essentially.
But I think that, look at that. That's Bill Alfonso right there. Wow.
Look at Pauly Dangerous.
Gosh.
Has hair.
So I think that the way that we're trying to frame this gimmick is that there haven't been like a significant amount of War Games matches to the point where we can consider it its own. We can consider it its own gimmick, but we can still classify it in a steel cage match because it's close to the ring. They're the new ones, except for the Blood and Guts one, don't have a roof on the top of them. The roof that is on the top of the steel cage in the War Games matches of old,
it's like 6 or 7 feet or 8 feet.
Very low.
Yeah.
So it's like, it for all the people that are in the match, they have like maybe 4 inches of headroom.
Yeah, it's crazy.
So it's just a vehicle for everybody just to beat the shit out of each other. But let's go back to why cage matches are a thing in professional wrestling. And from our research and just from being wrestling fans for extended periods of time, me with, you know, 25 years underneath my belt, Steve has probably around the same amount.
Give or take, yeah.
It's usually the end of a feud, the end of a rivalry,
it's
right?
The blow-off match where they're trying to keep out any kind of outside interference. And
or to keep in people who typically run away, right? And we go all the way back to, you know, the territory days where it is more so like the steel cages that you see today. However, they're not as big, right? You watched a Bruiser Brody versus, I forget what the guy's name was. He was a Japanese professional wrestler.
Yeah.
Right?
Great Kabuki.
Great
last
Kabuki.
Night.
That's the guy with the white pants, right?
Yeah.
That used to have the drawing on him. Those were just slugfests.
Yeah, it was like the Bruiser Brody was almost as tall as the cage.
That's insane.
Yeah,
that's a guy that's like 6'8", 6'9".
There was literally no, like, suplexes or anything. It was just straight beat the fuck out of each other.
Yeah. And that's something that I think that across the board, most recently that has been lost, right? Because even when we go to WWE, where their iterations of a steel cage match, eventually they started out with the traditional steel cage, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where you're talking about Jimmy Superfly Snuka going and facing Don Morocco and having that famous spot where he is jumping off of the cage, hitting the Superfly splash.
Yeah.
Which is historic because of two reasons. One, because of that reason. Two, it's the match that Mick Foley saw that he hitchhiked to that made him want to become a professional wrestler.
Correct.
Which
correct.
Still blows me away.
Yeah, that moment is what made Mick Foley want to be a wrestler.
Yeah, and it also makes a bunch of sense, right, for the way that Mick Foley threw himself around since then.
Mm-hmm.
That's number one and number two. However, the thing that I find to be crazy is that the evolution of steel cages kind of went backwards so that it could be easily shot on television with The blue steel cage.
Yeah, I was wondering that, because I always loved that look of the cage.
The reason why is because the quality of film, like the quality of like television equipment at the time, wasn't as good. And if you go back and watch, like in the Don Morocco versus Jimmy Superfly snooker match, unless you were live there, like obviously screens have evolved and televisions have evolved significantly since then, so the quality has gotten a lot better. But could you imagine watching that on like a Magnavox
in the 80s on pay-per-view? Yeah, that would be, that, I mean, they were probably excited, but man, that had to be rough to watch.
That would have been rough because you couldn't have been able to see anything except for the splash, unless somebody had, because I know that now people really have, they have like circles cut out in the cage so that you can get like a camera in there. But that doesn't really do anything.
And then the Hell in the Cell matches, I'm pretty sure they have a camera guy in there.
Yeah.
But we're not talking about those.
No, we're not talking about those. But even to that point with the match between the Young Bucks and the Lucha Brothers, they had a camera guy in there.
Did they?
They had a camera guy on the right turnbuckle. And then they have their cameras like on the posts of almost every ring post.
Oh yeah, they have the hard cams.
They have the GoPros, the ones that like will do the automatic movement to track the wrestlers.
I found it. So I thought that Peacock got rid of it. It was called Wrestle War and not Fall Brawl.
Got it. But what I noticed, because we usually like to do kind of a best, worst, and underrated for people to go back and look themselves for cage matches. The one thing, even with like the screwy finishes with some of the matches that we're going to be talking about, I think that the cage match, like any cage match, and this is not including Hell in a Cell, this is like specifically to cage matches. Mm-hmm. It is a match that if you have a bad match in, you... What the fuck is that guy's laugh?
No. It's hard to have a bad match.
It's hard to have a bad match because of the stipulation itself.
Yes.
It's an easy match to work because it is... There's three ways to win.
I think they got
majority,
rid of...
The majority of the time, there's either three ways to win or one way to win.
Yeah.
Right? Where... You either escape the cage, which is the one way to win, or there's three ways to win, which is escaping the cage, pinfall, or submission. Or it's just pinfall or submission.
The Bruiser Brody match, it was only escape the cage.
It was only escape the cage?
Yep.
Interesting.
And that had to be in the mid-80s. It didn't have a date.
It was just the territory.
Yeah.
That's interesting. I know that the Young Bucks match, it was just pinfall or submission.
Yeah.
So it made it so that there couldn't be any real outside interference for people to make it so that they couldn't escape the cage.
And same I was a big fan of the... I like the escape the cage aspect a lot.
I do, because it creates a level of suspense, right? It creates this... It creates a different aspect that you don't see with traditional wrestling matches, where people are, they're racing their opponent.
Yeah.
Right? And because usually it's either going through the door or you're dropping from the floor, one of my favorite cage matches, which is what other people would say is a bad cage match, is Lethal Lockdown, Mick Foley versus Sting, TNA.
Oh, I don't think I actually watched that one.
It's something that I remember, and it was one of those things where Mick Foley is, don't you dare. Don't you dare. They're right next to us. Don't you dare.
I know.
Don't you dare. Eyes here. So, Mick Foley and Sting had this cage match. It was Mick Foley's first match out of retirement, essentially, in TNA. He's wrestling as the heel.
It doesn't happen too often that Mick Foley is a heel these days.
No, and it was, I think, back like at the beginning of the 2010s when they were having that they were having that, those list of matches where they were bringing in a lot of the outside, like WCW guys and like WWE guys that already had name recognition built up. That match, for what it was, I think that what...
Let me stop you real quick. Look how fucking incredible shape Ricky Steamboat is.
He still is incredible
shape. In 92.
I know.
This is towards the end
of his career. Yeah.
And he just... Incredible.
I know, man.
Okay, sorry.
It's all good. One thing that I notice is that if you just work the same like pace,
mm-hmm.
where it's... You beat people up, it's the brawl... You throw somebody into the cage, somebody starts to bleed.
There's always blood. There's always blood in a good cage
There's
match.
Always blood. And then it's then a race to the top. Big spot. Everybody's hurt.
It's the same...
it's the same formula.
Yeah.
Every single time. And then a race to the bottom. They both are hanging off the top of the cage. They drop. Mick Foley beats Sting down to the bottom. That's essentially it.
Those are two great workers.
Sting. Fantastic. Well, and also the nostalgia of having Mick Foley, who has made cage matches famous, essentially.
And not like, only that.
Not made cage matches famous, that's the wrong way to put it. Has made... his fame through cage matches.
And not only that, you have two guys that don't need any of the win push. So it's just two stars being stars.
Yeah, and just in giving the rub to that match.
Yeah.
Another one that I watched last night in preparation of this podcast, which was a terrible screwy finish, which was in 2012... It was John Cena versus The Big Show. The conditions of the match were is if John Cena won, John Laurinaitis would be fired as the Raw general manager, I believe. So let's just break that down. We have Big Show versus John Cena, and Vince McMahon and John Laurinaitis are sitting at ringside.
Of course they are.
And Vince McMahon is cheering for John Cena while John Laurinaitis has a crutch because he has a bum knee. And this is around the time where Michael Cole was like full-blown heel.
I actually like heel Cole.
What?
A lot. I do. He's so stupid. I love it.
I don't. I actually do think that Michael Cole is a good ring announcer. But he doesn't get to have the liberty to call a match because he's just Vince McMahon's sock puppet.
Oh, yeah. Vince McMahon's got his hand right up his butthole.
Yeah, and just moving his mouth right along.
Yeah.
And the end of this match, even though it was a screwy finish and I did not like the finish, Brodus Clay comes out. Do you remember Brodus Clay?
Yeah, he wrestles for NWA now.
Yeah, he's the national champion.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, he's the NWA national champion. Tyrus.
He has a weird shape, too.
He's got a very weird shape. He's a bowling ball
like
of a man.
Egg. Like an yeah. egg.
He
like
is
a very... He's a dinosaur egg.
He is a dinosaur egg. He's a funkadactyl.
Yeah,
he's a funkadactyl egg.
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 Yeah, egg.
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 Egg. Okay.
And he is preventing Big Show from leaving the cage. And then...
Which is weird, because... He was never a heel, I feel like.
No, this was like a face thing. He was being a face. He was preventing Big Show from leaving the cage.
Oh, okay, okay.
This is at like peak Cena. This is peak Cena.
Okay.
Like, this crowd is going crazy for John Cena to win this match. Like, it's a bunch of five-year-olds.
You know what's funny is I used to hate Cena. And as I've watched him progress as a professional wrestler... He's not the greatest.
But he works the crowd well.
He works the crowd, and he tells the story. And that's what professional wrestling is all about.
Yeah. I don't like the style.
No, it's very...
It's very WWE.
Same thing, same thing, same move, same spot. All right, this is the format. We're going to do it.
It works.
Yeah.
But
he tells the story.
It it's so watered down because there's not really much complexity to it. The only complexity that happens is if there's somebody else in the ring that can go, that can break out of the formula.
Yeah.
Right? Because then he can have a little bit more leeway of what he can do based off of, because he's 250 pounds legitimately.
Cena?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. He's probably...
Closer to 260.
Yeah, but he's lean now.
Yeah. I mean, he's always been lean, though.
I could take him.
Okay.
I could headbutt him right in the chest.
You could. I don't know if that'll do anything to him. I think that'll do something to
you. And
then
I'll grab him by his ween and just jerk him off.
All right. So, in this match, still, what was happening was...
I just took it to that next level.
I'm going to make so much more eye contact with you now.
Stop it. It's weird.
Yeah. Well, you jerking off John Cena just made it a lot weirder.
Listen, man, if you're getting to a fight and you tell somebody you're going to jerk them off, one of two things are going to happen. Either they're going to get fucking weirded out and go away, or they're going to drop their pants and you have to jerk them off. Because if you say it, you have to do it.
That's a roll of the dice right there, man.
Yeah, it's a 50-50 shot that you're going to have to jerk a dude off.
All right. Anyways, so we're going back to this Big Show match with John Cena. And Brodus Clay is preventing him from leaving the cage. And you have, I forget who the two were. It was like two guys that came down. It was Alex Riley and somebody else. And Big Show punches the cage, punches both of them out. Zack Ryder comes down to do a run-in. He jumps in on the cage to prevent him from climbing over top. Big Show punches him out.
With the old... Dude, that dude's fist has got to be like two of mine.
It's huge. And then he did it to... Kofi Kingston comes up, prevents him from climbing out of the cage. He punches him out, and then Kofi Kingston kicks him down.
Yeah.
To where it's Big Show standing next to John Cena, punches John Cena out, and then John Cena, I think, comes back up to do the attitude adjustment.
To Big Show?
Big Show.
Fuck, that's 500-pound man.
I know. John Cena is about to exit the cage. John Laurinaitis prevents him, slams the cage in his face. It's like a screwy finish all the way to the end. No, no blood.
I don't think Cena's not a bleeder.
He's not. He has blood.
Has he?
Yeah. Huh. Go back and watch that Kurt Angle,
yes,
John Cena.
I remember it now.
First blood match.
That's right.
On Raw. He's bleeding so much onto Kurt Angle's bald head that everybody thought that Kurt Angle was bleeding.
I love it.
It's great. And then John Cena escapes the cage after so many screwy finishes to win the match, and the crowd goes crazy. I didn't like that aspect of that match.
But it told the story.
But it told a story of, like, nobody wants John Laurinaitis as the general manager, except for Big Show and John Laurinaitis.
I don't think anybody even wants John Laurinaitis working for WWE to this day.
I don't know, man. I think that the only person that wants that is Vince McMahon.
That's because he does all of Vince McMahon's dirty work. He makes all the fucking calls about, hey, we're going to have to let you go.
He's a yes man at the end of the day.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
The next one that I watch, which, and then I'll hand it over to you, was... And this is the number one worst cage match of all time, but I still enjoyed it, was Miz versus Shane McMahon.
That was a more recent one, where...
Yeah, it was like Money in the Bank.
Yeah.
Right after he had won the Saudi Arabia Cup, the best in the world.
Yeah, that's... Oh, that's right.
Became the best in the world.
They were a tag team, and...
Yeah, and then Miz was turned on by Shane McMahon, and... God, that's terrible, terrible storytelling. But either way,
Miz is he's a good wrestler. He really is.
But they just put him in bad situations.
But he tries to make gold out of these shitty situations.
And he does. He does
a pretty good job.
He does do a good job of it, and he does play the role very well. My issue with it is that when you put somebody in so many of those situations to where they can't thrive, because you know that they can get out of it, that's when you, whoa, look at that, Ricky.
Dude, you see his head hit the top of the cage when he was up for a powerbomb?
That's crazy.
Got stunning Steve Austin with a full head of hair, bleeding.
I know, that's crazy.
Dude,
man,
this is just a great match.
So, the match with Shane McMahon, that was crazy. Where it was like, it was Miz trying to beat the shit out of Shane McMahon. Again, the stipulation was pinfall submission or escape the cage.
Yeah.
And it's this back and forth of Shane trying to escape, Miz trying to beat him down to get the pinfall. There was a point where Miz had the figure four on him. It didn't break. Like, a rope break didn't break it. Shane goes to leave the cage, opens the door, brings a chair back in. Miz starts hitting him with the chair. This is where it lost me. And this is where I think that people get really upset for cage matches, is that sometimes in wrestling, they like to ignore stipulations that are already set in place that contradict what they've already done with their officiating in the match.
AEW, I will say, the one thing I don't like about AEW, they do that a lot.
What?
They ignore, like...
What, like stipulations and, like rules?
Like, for instance, there was a match recently, I can't remember what it was on, but they were putting people through a table and nobody was calling the match. Like, it wasn't disqualification.
Was it was it the Kenny Omega versus Christian Cage match?
I think it was, yeah. But I get it, it was a championship match.
It's a championship match.
But still, it's like...
Well, he was setting up the table and then it eventually got used on him, right?
Yeah, but it's like, come on. Any other match, any other pay-per-view, it would have been called.
But it's the AEW championship match.
We're going to disagree on this one, aren't you?
Yeah, 100%. Nah. Because that's how it's called in Japan, where it's like, he was using the table and hitting him over the head with it. He set up the table, and then he got speared through the table. Even though Christian Cage got the worst of that exchange.
Oh, my God.
Jesus Christ. Dude, got impaled.
His ribs?
Oh, my gosh. I thought he broke his rib.
Look at the amount of blood.
That's already in the back.
Yeah, that's already in this ring.
Well, you can see, studying Steve Austin, his head is already red.
Yeah, his hair and everything. Dude, Rick Rude, what a physique. What a physique.
Back in the 80s, man.
No, this is the 90s.
This is the 90s, 93.
92.
Wow.
You got the natural Arn Anderson looking fucking...
Looking like a jack dad.
Yeah.
He's going to go and coach JV football.
Fuck, so good.
So good.
Okay.
Back to what I was saying is that WWE just ignores stipulations so that it fits the narrative that they want to put instead of just calling the match like a sporting contest. So Shane McMahon is in the figure four, is crawling along the ropes. And if you aren't familiar with professional wrestling, which if you're listening to this podcast, thank you, by the way, for giving us a try. If you grab onto the ropes and you're in a submission or a pinfall in a regular match that has disqualification, it breaks the hold.
Yeah.
It breaks the counter. It breaks the hold. This match does not have disqualification. He's using the ropes to get to the cage door so that he can escape, grabs a chair from underneath the ring, pulls it back in, tries to use it on The Miz. The Miz turns around, uses it on him, hits his finisher, which is the skull-crushing finale. But because he's close to the ropes, Shane McMahon grabs the rope at the count of 2.5, and it stops the count.
Yeah, but meanwhile... Well, you were saying there was a submission going on, and he's holding the ropes.
And he's holding the ropes, and nothing happens.
Yeah.
Nothing happens. That's what drives me absolutely crazy with professional wrestling, is the lack of continuity sometimes. Even in the same match.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not even like it would be different if it was like a different match and they're like, oh, for this match, we're going to use the ropes. It's like, what the heck are we doing?
When I was watching the Bruiser Brody match last night.
Just tearing up.
I can't help it.
Just tearing up our tablecloth.
So when I was watching the Bruiser Brody match, I know I told you about this, that you know, it was a stiff match and they were calling it perfectly. Even if a kick got missed and, you know, they would say, oh, he didn't get all of that one. Like, they would acknowledge that it was a botched kick or a
botched... And you're talking about the announcers.
Yeah, the announcers for the Bruiser Brody Great Kabuki match, where nowadays, like, oh, he just got him real good. And you could clearly see that he didn't get him at all.
Yeah. I think that the one thing that, for me, that is, like, apparent in cage matches, that there's like, three things that make up a good cage match, right? One, the escape the cage aspect of it. Right.
Yeah, it makes it exciting and fun.
100%. The second is the inherent violence of being in a solid steel cage, where the possibility of a lot of blood is there,
which you're seeing a lot nowadays.
Yes,
more than
what you've seen in the past 10 years.
Yeah.
And because of the inherent violence of the match, you have two guys that can't escape one another, so they're beating each other more with either the cage or their fists, whatever they like, right?
Yeah.
And the third, which I think that we can get to now, is the amount of high spots that come out of those matches, right?
Yeah.
Where, and what we mean by high spots, if you're not familiar, is jumping off tall shit.
Man, and I feel like cages now, they're just getting taller and taller and taller.
So I would agree, but also disagree with you, because the WWE cage, if you notice the height of the WWE cage versus what they were with, you know, King Kong Bundy versus Hulk Hogan, or even Hulk Hogan versus Andre the Giant at WrestleFest. I saw that match. That was really good. That was a good one that
I
watched.
The Bundy match.
And that was, it was from pretty, what you were telling fun. Me, it tells a good story.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, I'm not a big Hogan fan. Even in, like, the height of Hulkamania. Like, sorry. I'm not a,
oh. Oh, my just, gosh. Look at this. So for everybody listening, Sting is like gorilla pressing
Rick Rude
to the top of the War Games cage and just like slamming him to the top of it like he's doing a shoulder press. And Rick Rude has to be like 230 pounds.
Yeah.
God damn.
Dude, this is hands down one of the... Look at fucking Arn Anderson just leaking.
Just with those white trunks. Look at that.
Oof.
So, I watched, I don't know if you're not as familiar with TNA as I am.
No, I'm starting to get into it a little more and more. Because they make it really easy to watch a lot of their stuff now.
Especially with Impact Plus.
You got Impact Plus. They have a 24-hour stream on Twitch.
Yeah, and if you have a Samsung TV, which gives you the same thing as the Twitch channel.
Yeah.
You have it as a default channel on your television.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah. The non-paid advertisement for Samsung, by the way.
Non-paid advertisement for Impact.
Impact. But what we've noticed is that because they don't have the same recognition, they have to do more with less.
Yeah.
And one of the biggest spots that I've seen that's innovative is the Elix Skipper Hurricane Rana from the top of the cage, where he does a catwalk on the top of the cage. I'm about to pull it up. But
oh yeah, like this. There's 250 of this one. Actually, I'm sorry, the white one, there's 100.
Yeah. I can hear everything around me.
Oh, yeah. So here's what it is. So he does like a catwalk.
Oh, this is when they had the 8-sided ring?
Yeah, this is when they had the 6-sided ring. He does a catwalk to do a Hurricanrana.
Holy shit. And that was like, he knew he was falling. So it was like.
So he was falling backwards already.
And who is that did that?
On Kazarian. Oh, okay. On Frankie Kazarian.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You went blank there for a second?
Yeah, because he goes by Kaz now.
Oh, yeah. He's the elite hunter.
He's the elite hunter.
I like it. I hope they do something really good with that. They have to. AEW doesn't do anything for nothing.
I mean, he's going to be in, like, what, a five? They're going to do, like, a Survivor Series type match, probably. I would love it if they did a Survivor Series type match where they had a blow-off feud or they made a star out of somebody.
Yeah.
For coming back from 3-1 the same way that WWE did with Roman Reigns, where he... I know, but they have done a good job of building him up to be this world beater.
They have.
They've done an excellent job of it.
Yeah.
So what are your favorite spots or cage matches? Because I know that I showed you the one with Chris Benoit where he does
the diving headbutt
from the top of the cage.
Dude, that I watched that. So then I went back and I watched a couple like. I watched the Bruiser Brody Kabuki Mac, the Great Kabuki, not booty.
Yeah.
Match.
I see you.
Well, that was just a slugfest. It was just a fucking stiff, just two legitimate tough guys just beating the fuck at each other.
Right.
And then, I don't know how I stumbled onto this, but I stumbled onto the Big Show and Braun Strowman cage match.
Oh, yeah.
Which... Okay, so, I get it. So, They're two giants.
Hold on. I'm going to revise my third one. It either is like a hot, it's a big spot, which is either a high spot where somebody's jumping off the cage,
yeah.
Or what you're about to say, which
well,
is somebody.
There's two of them. There's
getting,
two spots in that.
Well, they go through the cage, the
dude,
side
I'm
of the cage.
About a fucking 7'3" man, 500 pounds, doing an elbow drop off the top rope. And the cage in the fucking ring just being fine. And then Braun Strowman puts him through the fucking cage. Which is crazy.
He throws him through the cage, yeah.
Yeah.
And there's like that spot, the first time that I saw that spot was we're going back all the way to like 2004, 2006-ish. Do you remember when Bobby Lashley faced Umaga?
Yeah.
It, for like on ECW.
Yeah, he put him through the cage.
No, that's not what happened. He like Umaga's standing on the apron, and Bobby Lashley just runs and does a flip into the cage, and it breaks the cage down.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and I don't remember anything about that match besides that spot, and just thinking that was fucking nuts, and then. The next time that happened was when Mark Henry did that to the Big Show.
See, that was the first time I saw the cage come down. I think it had to be, and it wasn't anybody going through the cage. It was when Kane came out and he just fucking ripped the cage apart to get into the ring.
Yeah, the Hell in a Cell one, yeah. Right?
Just fucking ripped it like an animal.
Yeah, he ripped the door off.
Are you really going to do that right now?
What, eat some pineapple?
Yeah.
Yeah. Can you hear that?
I can hear it. David's going to be so mad. I think you just mute it yourself. Oh, okay. This is weird. I can hear only myself. All right.
You got to carry the podcast.
That's fine. So, yeah. Big Show. Big Show does a fucking elbow drop off the top rope of the cage. Well, not the cage, but they're in the ring.
Yep.
And, you know, they're doing a couple hard-hitting shots.
We're at the Braun Strowman match right
yeah.
now. Yep.
And then Braun Strowman takes him and power slams him through the fucking cage.
Yeah. That's nuts. This is Braun Strowman when he didn't realize that he was balding.
Yeah, poor guy.
He just
embrace it, man.
He has, and he looks so good now.
I know, I'm jealous. He looks so much better than me. In so many aspects.
Wow. Way to make this about you, Steve.
Well, duh.
You're so self-absorbed.
Sometimes.
Yeah. This is coming from the guy that every time that he looks in a mirror says, hey.
Yeah, you literally... Let me tell you that. So, every time you got up yesterday when we were in the hotel, you just stood in front of the mirror and go, God damn it, for a fat guy, I'm in shape. I just couldn't... And then you slap your own butt. What the fuck?
I had an audience. I don't know what to tell you, man. I had an audience, and I had to live up to my bravado of being just like a total self-absorbed piece of shit, you know?
Yeah, look at Larry Zbyszko about to fucking beat.
Ow!
Oh, yeah.
God. That sounds... That looks shit. Miserable.
Dude, that's the great thing about the War Games matches. That's why I love them so much, is they literally just destroy the ring.
Yeah. Because it's a War Games.
Yeah, they did that in Blood and Guts also. They literally ripped up the mat.
So that's another good spot that we don't talk about, is that even though it gets a lot of shit now... Look at that guy.
Fucking Nacho Libre.
I know, man.
Nacho!
Oh my god, I hate that so much. Please don't ever do that again.
Two more times today. All right. So what I was saying is, I don't fucking remember what I was saying. Oh, the spot with Chris Jericho.
Yeah, so in case anybody's wondering, the convention has now opened, so our distractions have started.
It's gonna be great. Ooh, there we go.
Crack a cold one for the boys, baby.
Yeah, baby. That low carb monster.
Dang, I should have got two drinks. I got one.
I'm fucked up. You need your bang?
Yeah, baby.
Shut your mouth. So, Chris Jericho in War Games is on top of the cage with MJF.
Blood and Guts.
He is about...
keep going.
What a weird shape.
Okay. Oh my god. I can't do this. What the fuck?
So, Chris Jericho's on top of the Blood and Guts cage with MJF, gets pushed off, hits the ramp,
falls onto a mattress.
Falls, yeah. I really do appreciate how much Excalibur sells for AEW. He did that with the exploding barbed wire deathmatch too. Where he was like, oh my gosh, Eddie Kingston, you know, he was just so overwhelmed with the explosions. Just like, why don't you just say that he fainted because he was so scared for his friend's life?
Yeah.
Why don't you just say that? That's a logical explanation to the reason why he fainted, because he thought he was going to die.
Jesus.
Nope.
But you know what? It was like, it had to be 25 feet up in the air that he fell.
He fell.
And if he would have missed.
And completely separated his elbow.
If he would have been just 2 inches off.
Oh, he would have fucked himself up.
Yeah, he would have.
Like, that is such a wild drop.
And you're doing it, like, you're just falling back.
Yeah.
You have no, you can't, you don't know what you're falling onto.
There's no protection. You're just hoping that what you have practiced through the day has paid off.
Yeah, you have to respect it a little, even though I know that people are like, oh, I can't believe he did that.
Yeah, but at the same time, it doesn't matter, because it's just, it's for the show, right?
Yeah.
Same thing with another one that I like is, it's a cage match with Ken Anderson and Kurt Angle, Lethal Lockdown 2014.
Mm-hmm.
Ken Anderson, to start the match, has the key, like, around his neck. He's about to escape the cage. Kurt Angle pulls him back in, takes the key out of the lock, puts the chain back on, throws the key out, flicks him off, beats the shit out of him, sets him up for a moonsault, and almost misses. Like, over-rotates to the left.
Oh.
And, like, falls directly on Ken Anderson's face.
Oh, my God.
And that's the finish of the match.
Oof.
I know. It looks like
it sounds. I haven't seen it, but it sounds rough as fuck.
I mean, it's just, it's crazy, man. He, right here. It's 2010. Sorry, everybody. Sorry.
2010. That's 11 years ago.
I know.
Math.
It's not hard math.
Hmm.
Oh, well, looks like the internet went down.
Oh, there it is.
Fantastic.
At least we got some of the internet going.
Well, I mean, it's because you're watching War Games, man.
Yeah, War Games takes all of the internet.
Let's see this. Fuck. All right, you're just going to have to... Oh, hold on.
Oh, we got it. We're up.
Hold on. All right. Pay attention.
I'm listening.
Look at this shit.
I'm going to come over here and talk on your mic. Oh, my God. Holy shit.
Dude, you could see it when he jumped.
Over rotates yeah. to the left. I thought he broke his arm right there.
Holy shit.
I know. Crazy.
I'm great. Thanks for asking.
Oh, my gosh. But, yeah, I think that we're going to conclude this episode of the podcast. Let us know what your favorite cage matches are of all time. My name's Luke Bad News Burton.
I'm Psycho Steve Fury.
And this is Wrestleology. You can find us at Wrestleology Podcast on Instagram.
Wrestleology Podcast on Facebook.
_ Wrestleology on Twitter.
And you can email us at WrestleologyPodcast@gmail.com.
And in addition, you can find us on all major platforms, which would be Spotify, iTunes Music, or anywhere else you can get your podcast from. Thank you guys for listening. We'll see you guys next week. Okay, bye-bye.
Booyah.